The second-generation dictator who oversaw ExxonMobil's inherited contract was Teodoro Obiang Nguema, a nephew of Macias's and a brigadier general trained at a military academy in Spain. In 1979, Obiang had led an uprising against his uncle and seized power. He arrested Macias and assigned mercenary bodyguards to execute his uncle by firing squad. "When I came to power, the place was completely destroyed," Obiang remembered. "No electricity, no roads. The schools were closed." Few reliable statistics were kept for the country by its government or international agencies, but per capita income was perhaps $100 per year. Hunger stalked the forest villages. Less than a third of the population had access to safe drinking water. Mothers and babies commonly died in childbirth, and life expectancy fewer than 50 years. Because of the depredations of the Macias years, the country's cocoa economy, once modestly successful, no longer existed. Obiang settled into power in a less wanton but no less ruthless manner than his predecessor. He turned ministries, businesses, and land over to his family members, and through them constructed layers of internal security, strengthened at the inner core by his palace guard of salaried Moroccan soldiers. Black Beach Prison remained open, and the torture techniques of its jailers and political prosecutors did not much change, according to one human rights investigation after another. Still, Obiang kept the United States satisfied about his foreign alliances. Unlike Macias, he sought, in his way, to work as a professional authoritarian, in the approximate manner of those who led neighboring nations in West Africa. To interact more successfully with his French-speaking neighbors, Obiang took on a French tutor at his palace. He played tennis regularly and jogged along the rutted red clay road between the airport and Malabo's elegant but water-streaked colonial plazas. He danced through the night at parties and drank copiously. At business meetings, Obiang usually turned up in a dark, tailored suit with a pocket kerchief. He could be coherent, direct, and even sophisticated, if also persistently obtuse about the precepts of good government. He developed cancer, and eventually traveled to the United States about 4 times a year for treatment. The scope and seriousness of the disease was a closely guarded secret, but Obiang, as rugged as a crocodile, seemed to overcome it. His regular medical travel to the United States, and a deep antipathy toward France and Spain, turned him gradually into an unrequited friend of America's. Oil, he hoped, might persuade Washington to embrace him. Equatorial Guinea's territorial ocean waters encompassed some of the same geology that had much earlier enriched Nigeria and Gabon with oil dollars. Obiang provided exploration leases to Spanish oil companies during the late 1980s. It was relatively early in the development of offshore oil technology, and the Spaniards reported they could find nothing. "Thanks to the American embassy in Cameroon," Obiang recalled, "Joe Walter, an irrepressible Houston wildcatter, agreed to take a second look." In 1991, tiny Walter International discovered Equatorial Guinea's first oil in the Alba field. Obiang interpreted the news as evidence that Spain had deliberately suppressed his country's economic potential, while the Americans seemed prepared to back him. Walter sold out its holdings as Mobil, Marathon, and Amerada Hess arrived to explore further and to sign larger-scale production-sharing contracts. Equatorial Guinea hired no outside lawyers or investment bankers to negotiate. Obiang's first-ever oil minister, Juan Olo, worked out the terms. Mobil acquired rights to the offshore Zafiro field, which, as it turned out, contained at least 1 billion barrels, or at least 3 times Mobil's entire annual worldwide production of oil and gas liquids in 1995. Mobil embedded itself in financial partnership with the Obiang government. It paid for land, office leases, and security services. The local companies it worked with had many ties to the president and his family. Under the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act, it can be illegal for American companies to make sidebar payments to businesses controlled by foreign government officials who are at the same time handing out lucrative contracts for oil. In later years, the Department of Justice questioned Mobil's deals with local firms, but ExxonMobil warded off the investigations by arguing that it had no alternative but to invest with the ruling family because there was no market for land or services that was not controlled by the Obiang clan. The Foreign Corrupt Practices Act, as interpreted by Justice, did not hold that some countries should be avoided altogether, only that American corporations should not act corruptly if they had a choice in the matter. Some of Mobil's and later ExxonMobil's payments to Obiang's regime covered scholarships for students and relatives selected by the president to study in the United States. The corporation also held a joint investment in a fuel services company. Obiang controlled the venture's minority partner, a company called Avayak, according to the findings of the U.S. Senate staff investigation. The private American, especially oil companies, would not wish to be pulled into USG, United States government, efforts to combat human rights violations in Cameroon and Equatorial Guinea, reported a U.S. Embassy cable written just after Equatorial Guinea's oil began to flow in earnest. U.S. companies are aware of human rights violation, but they present themselves as ahead of the curve. That seemed mainly a euphemism for corporate strategies of hunkering down, avoiding publicity about human rights and other controversial aspects of Obiang's reign, and staying away from State Department campaigns to reform Equatorial Guinea. There were foreign policy episodes, such as in the Aceh War, when ExxonMobil leaned on state to intervene on the corporation's behalf. Equatorial Guinea suggested a different imperative. The Bush administration's human rights campaigning in Africa was more likely to taint ExxonMobil in Obiang's eyes than to help the corporation's position as an oil contractor. ExxonMobil therefore adopted a low-profile posture of strict non-interference in Equatoguinean politics, coupled with quiet advice to Obiang aimed at helping him improve his international reputation, which would redound to their mutual benefit.